This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, and good afternoon again to you. John Williams here, Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Let's get started with Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, on the eve of Veterans Day. Hi, Tom. Welcome.
Always good to be with you, John Williams. How are you?
Good, and I know that you have looked out for veterans for a number of reasons over the years. Let's talk a little bit about veterans, their employability, and what jobs they're finding. What do you see?
Yeah, so, I mean, number one, we've got a huge group of people that have served our country, and we need to service them back. We need to take care of them. I'm a firm believer in that. I wish the government did more of a job transition, number one. Number two, we've got several different layers of veterans. You've got non-college educated, mostly enlisted folks. You've got officers that are coming back. We've got pulling out of Afghanistan and people that are coming into the private sector. So we've got a lot of these challenges that are facing our veterans, and quite frankly, they don't know what skills are transferable and what they're capable of doing. And what our goal has been, we started a practice called the LaSalle Veteran Network at our company, LaSalle Network, and it's purely to help 1,000 veterans this year. And we're making a run on achieving that number. We're at about 800 right now with 2 months left in the year, and giving them resume counseling, career coaching, advice, and introductions to other organizations that may be able to help them.
You talked about these layers of veterans, because when I first heard about this, I thought, well, it's somebody who's been in there for 20 years and they don't know what it's like in the private sector. But somebody could serve 5 years in the military. They're a veteran too. So they might not be so skills challenged because they're younger, and maybe they have skills that translate perfectly into the private market. I don't know.
Well, I mean, think about this, John. You got a kid from rural Kansas. He's 18 years old. He enlists in the military, and for whatever reason, and he's there. He goes overseas for 5 years and does a couple different tours. He comes back. He's 22, 23 years old, and he's been an infantryman, or he's been working in the kitchen, or he's done whatever he's done, but he doesn't have a college education. He's now been working, being told what to do, being told what to wear, right? He's been overseas and seen things that most of us will never see in our lives, but he hasn't had to sit behind a desk all day long, right? He's had to be able to run. He went through basic training and get in better shape than there's not an obesity problem in the military. Right.
Yeah.
And then you come out and you're dealing with things like, A, what time do you get to work? If I get to work at 8 o'clock, because that's when we're supposed to be there, why isn't everybody else? How are the rules here? Then you get into the situation of, we all don't go to the same place for lunch every day. Right. What time do we leave?
Yeah.
Do I do what I'm told? When do I think? When do I not? It's a huge transition to go from the military into the private sector.
I wonder if they are schooled on what words to put on LinkedIn or your resume.
They're not really. I mean, there's always, you know, the hard part is there's always avenues, if you're willing to look hard enough, for them to gain some knowledge. But there just isn't a lot of formal plans for veterans as they transition out of the federal government into the private sector, and what their job titles were and how to explain that. What skills they had and what's transferable. What they're, you know, if I'm a cook in the Navy and I come out, am I only eligible to be a cook in the private sector? You know, you got a lot of people, and I'm not saying everybody, mm-hmm. but you got a lot of people who join the military for lack of other options in life, for lack of other choices. Maybe didn't come from certain things. I'm not talking about the people that are going to West Point and going to the Air Force Academy, right? It's a very different life, and how to help these folks transition. You know, I'm really proud of our director of operations, Christian Canyas, who was just named by Crain's Chicago Business as one of the most influential executive veterans who are executives in Chicago. And he's spearheading, in addition to his day job, our LaSalle Veteran Network. And he was enlisted. He served overseas. Then he went on the GI Bill and got his undergraduate and master's degree from Loyola. But not everybody's like that. And not everybody has that motivation or intellectual ability to do it.
Or even interest. And I suppose, though, if whatever you're doing in the military, if you do it in the private sector, you're going to get a raise. Is that true? Do these veterans at least have a bigger paycheck to look forward to?
Well, that's the challenge. So now, how do I price what I'm worth? Do I know what the market bears? And when I go in, am I going to be taken advantage of for my salary, since I wasn't making market salary doing that in the military?
Yeah.
So there's those changes. And then you have the real, you know, we're in a society right now, John, and you and I have talked about this, where people have been working from home. They're scared of COVID. They're scared of when they went remote. Now they're scared of coming back in the office. And you have a lot of people. There's been more suicide attempts, children who are afraid. We've got an increase in prescription drugs for depression and anxiety. Okay. All that's real and legit, and employees are going through some crazy emotional times. Now take somebody who's going through that, who served overseas, who had 1, 2, 3, 4 tours in Afghanistan, and they're coming back here, and the emotional trauma that comes with managing that person. And do they want to go to therapy? Do they know about therapy? Do they understand the copay of the insurance program? How do they go do that? Do they feel that they can do it on company time?
I know.
How do they get the time off?
I know that you help these veterans with these sorts of things, or find the resources to address these things. That's your goal of 1,800. How do people reach out to you?
So LaSalleNetwork.com, just like the street, network.com.
Yep.
And you can go on there, and we have plenty of access points and email contact information. And if you are a veteran or know of a veteran and they are looking for a new job, they're looking to transition, and we don't just help enlisted men. We do a lot of officer placements.
Yeah.
And happy to help and coach as best we can, doing our part.
The LaSalleNetwork.com. Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO. We'll talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
Stay healthy, John.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst at CreditCards.com, joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome back, Ted. How are you?
Good afternoon. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
You sound like an optimistic man, sir.
Well, it's almost the holidays, and you know, I hope that people are able to keep their debt in check. You know, our recent survey suggests maybe not so much. About 4 in 10 people told us they're likely to add to their debt or take on new debt this holiday season. This is one area that we definitely need to watch, because everything seems to cost more this year, with inflation up and holiday travel coming back and entertaining coming back. And, you know, a lot of these are good things. We're thankful that, you know, COVID seems to be retreating, but it does come with some new pressures on your finances. And I wouldn't want to see people unwind these hard-won gains. Total credit card debt's 13% lower now than it was at the end of 2019, according to the New York Fed. So I'd love to see people keep that momentum going.
Yeah, it's an interesting number. I was going to ask, 13% less credit card debt we have now than we did pre-pandemic. Is that what you said?
That's right. Yeah. And it's ticked up a little bit the past two quarters. So up a couple of percentage points in the third quarter, up a couple in the second quarter. So it bottomed out in Q1 of this year. But so far, the uptick has been relatively slight. I do wonder, though, if the holidays may represent more of a turning point, just because I do think there's a ton of pent-up demand out there. I think a lot of the excess savings that people have has largely been spent at this point. The stimulus has pretty much waned. I think you throw in the fact that there's a lot more temptations to do stuff and higher prices, and I do wonder if we're going to start to see this credit card debt figure jump by leaps and bounds. You know, I always try to be careful in talking about this, because I don't want to say, oh, you can't do anything and you can't have any fun. And I mean, of course, we want you to have a great holiday. But it is also, I think, important to raise awareness of this issue that the average credit card charges 16%. So we just want to go in with a good plan that, you know, hopefully we can have a great holiday season, but not have those regrets come January when the bills arrive.
You know, we talk about spending and how there's pent-up demand and cash on the sidelines. I don't know that we think that that's credit card purchases that people are going to be making. I think we rather imagined it as cash purchases that people were going to be making.
That's definitely a good strategy, that you can use cash or debit, you know, especially if you don't trust yourself not to overspend. If you can pay in full, credit cards are great, because you get rewards, you get better buyer protections, better fraud protections, extended warranties, stuff like that. But everybody's a little bit different. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sticking to cash or debit if that's appropriate for your situation. I wonder, too, about this whole buy now, pay later craze. Companies like Affirm and Afterpay, Klarna, you know, that worries me a bit just because I don't think a lot of people think of that as debt. And, you know, maybe it's a viable option. You make four payments over 6 weeks and you don't get charged any interest. I mean, that could work out just fine. But sometimes these plans go on longer. Sometimes they do charge interest. I just think there's a slippery slope sometimes. And we get offered these online at the point of sale. And then it doesn't feel like $200 anymore. It feels like $450 payments. And again, maybe that works for you, but I just worry that sometimes people do a bunch of these and then it gets kind of confusing and then you've spent more than you thought you did. And I think this is a big trend this holiday season. These companies are everywhere these days.
Are those third-party sort of cash providers or are those stores selling items on payment plans? Is Macy's doing something like that?
So Macy's works with Klarna. They actually took an investment stake in Klarna. These are outside companies. You know, some of them are publicly traded, others are private, but it's basically all these financial technology companies that are providing basically point-of-sale lending. It's kind of like reverse layaway. And they're partnered with many leading retailers, like Affirm recently announced a partnership with Target, and they have a whole bunch of other partners as well. But, you know, we see Affirm now with Target and Amazon, and it just feels like this thing is really gaining steam. And
well, excuse me, Ted, but then how do they make money if they're not charging interest? Are they banking on you defaulting, essentially, and running up some sort of debt, some sort
of
interest?
The merchants actually pay a higher fee. So the merchants often pay something like 5%. So it's even higher than they would pay for credit card interchange. Mm-hmm. So that's some of how they make money. Sometimes there's interest, sometimes there's late fees, but a big part of their revenue stream is that spread. And actually, if you use it responsibly, it actually could work for you. It just buys you a little time, and then basically the merchant is the one kind of footing the bill. But I think all too often, it can lead to overspending, or you slip up and you pay late, and then that's a problem.
I guess the stores are figuring, we'll pay 5% if you come to our store, and then if our margin is such, we can make up the difference, right?
That's the pitch, yep. It's also, it's a guaranteed sale now. The store's not the one taking the credit risk. It's this outside lending provider. There's a lot of data that people spend more when they use these kind of things. They return time and time again. It's an interesting kind of blending of the physical and the digital. It's almost like, well, it's a new twist on layaway, but I kind of think it's also a new twist on the store credit card, because those are really aggressively pushed in person, and they still are, but I think buy now, pay later is especially useful online. You could do it in store, but I feel like there's kind of a divide there, that store credit cards get pushed in person, and buy now, pay later gets pushed online.
Really interesting. Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst. Creditcards.com. Creditcards.com. Out of time today, Ted. We'll talk again. Thanks for your help today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Last week, we've been doing this for quite a while now, talking about pent-up demand, about cash on the sidelines, about people's eagerness to buy things this Christmas. We've heard of some optimism out there, even though our last guest wasn't so sure that people are going to be spending or overspending at Christmas time. But even if you wanted to, one of the questions I've been asking is, how do you get the stuff? Think about this. Lack of availability of basic items like Nike products. They expect their Christmas sales will be off at least 30% due to lack of product availability from Russia, from Asia. That's Nike. 30%. If I'm reading his numbers correctly, his numbers are from Dean John Quelch. He's the dean of the Miami Herbert Business School at the University of Miami. Hey, John, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for saying hello. How are you?
Great to meet you, John. Thank you for the opportunity.
Is that true? Nike's expecting 30% less this year?
That's what we hear, and that's interesting, because if a company as large and powerful as Nike cannot get its supply through from China and other Asian markets, you know, if you're a small small brand, relatively speaking, you're going to have an even tougher time. So we are anticipating significant supply shortages. And I think if you go onto any website for major global brands, you'll find that there are size stockouts frequently evident even today. And we're still 7 weeks, 6 weeks away from Christmas.
Is there issue finding workers? And if so, is it because people don't want to come back to work? Is it the pandemic? What's caused their supply issues?
Yeah, so it's really a combination, John. Certainly the pandemic has had an impact on production quantity and efficiency. Certainly we've had many workers reconsidering whether or not they want to continue in particular jobs. The American Trucker Association estimates that there are 80,000 trucking jobs currently going begging. And then thirdly, of course, we have all of the supply chain problems out of Asia and elsewhere that have disrupted the transportation systems, leaving many container ships waiting outside the LA port in Long Beach. The average turnaround time there is double what it was pre-pandemic, so you can see how that bears upon increased inefficiency. And all of that inefficiency ends up costing the consumer more. But consumers, let's face it, John, they can't make any money by keeping their money in the bank. There's no interest on CDs worth having. And so with the inflation as it is, people are lining up to go out and buy new cars, invest in home improvement projects, and spend their cash. So what we're seeing then is a surge in demand post-pandemic, along with the supply shortages, and that further fuels price inflation.
Yeah, everybody, more dollars are chasing fewer goods or fewer available goods.
Correct.
If the items are on a boat, say, off the coast of California, if somebody has to pay the expense for that boat floating there, right? There's
correct.
Fuel costs, there's staff
correct.
Costs. And so I presume that gets passed along to the person who's the store or company who's waiting for those things to come in, and I presume ultimately to consumers. Is that a right chain of command?
Absolutely. All of these incremental costs stemming from these inefficiencies in the supply chain end up being passed on to the end consumer. Now, there are differences from one product to another. In the case of some products that are high-value products, such as computer chips, for example, you know, they are low bulk, they're high value, the shipping cost isn't that great as a percentage of the total price to the end customer, and as a result, you know, these cost increments don't really have a major impact on the end consumer price. But on more bulky, lower value products, obviously the shipping costs are a higher percentage of the total end-to-consumer price, and therefore they have a higher percentage impact when they increase.
Is the most critical part of all of this the employees? Like we're saying, well, where are we going to get the lumber? Where are we going to get the computer chips? Where are we going to get the glass for wine bottles? There's shortages all across the globe. But at the end of the day, is that really an employee problem, people not going back to work?
Well, there is a shortage in that respect. There are 6 million people, it's estimated, who have dropped out of the workforce during the COVID period. And so there are a lot of people still sitting on the sidelines. There are a lot of people who have decided to, retire early or go part-time or, you know, drive an Uber instead of driving a truck. So a lot of people have made changes in their lifestyle as a result of looking in the mirror during COVID. So there is a mismatch of supply and demand mm-hmm. in the employee market as well as there is in the market for goods.
wonder if we're going to figure out what happened. Someday someone, you're going to write a paper and say, so here's what happened. The pandemic happened and truck drivers and waitresses, after having lost their jobs, decided, you know what, it wasn't so bad on the other side. I don't want to do that anymore. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe the American worker deserved a reset, even if it was forced upon them. I'm just talking out of my hat here, but clearly something's going on, right?
Well, certainly, John, a lot of people, as I said, looked in the mirror and decided that this was an opportunity to try out something different, and maybe they're enjoying doing so. Another factor that bears on inflation that we haven't mentioned is wage inflation, because obviously with the shortage of workers in many industries, we've seen a rash of strikes by labor unions where, you know, they feel that now is a great time to take advantage of the worker shortage. And in addition to that, there is a large number of members of the workforce who are dissatisfied that they were required to work extra hard during the COVID period, but they haven't been properly rewarded for all of their extra efforts. So that's causing a problem, too.
I need a short answer to this, but you sound pretty bearish then about inflation. That is, some of our guests think it's transitory and everything's going to be hunky-dory. That's an overstatement, but you sound like inflation is going to be real and more severe. Is that true?
Absolutely. I think that the current inflation estimate that we're running at is around about 5.4%. I would certainly expect that to nudge significantly higher in the next 12 months, and I don't think we've seen the end of it at this point.
10%, is 10% your number, sir?
I think that's maybe a little bit on the high side, but certainly 7 to 8.
John Quelch, Dean of the Miami Herbert Business School at the University of Miami, and also a book titled Compassionate Management of Mental Health in the Modern Workplace. Another interesting resource there. John, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, John.
This is WGN Radio's Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A federal judge has sided with United Airlines in its legal battle with employees who sought religious or medical exemptions from the company's COVID-19 vaccine requirement. The court refused to impose a temporary injunction, which would have prevented United from placing the workers on unpaid leave. United says 99% of its employees are now vaccinated and that its policy will keep everyone on its planes as safe as possible. Nearly 11,000 Boeing employees have asked to be exempted from that company's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. The rising number of workers is a sign of backlash among some employees, particularly to the Biden administration's rules for government contractors. The 11,000 figure represents about 9% of Boeing's workforce. The strife comes as the company works to turn around its finances, resolve quality lapses, and prepares for contract talks with its largest union. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Business during the pandemic was really good for Meals on Wheels Chicago, and that's bad because it meant more people were in need.
When the pandemic hit, we increased about 67%.
And Shannon Murphy of Meals on Wheels Chicago says the number of people getting meal delivery has stayed high.
About 100,000 meals a week to over 10,000 clients.
100,000 meals a week?
Yeah. It's a pretty big scale.
Wow. And she says it isn't just food being delivered.
84% of people that we serve tell us that the driver that drops off their meals is the only social contact that they have all week.
How about that? So if you're looking for a place for your charity dollars, Meals on Wheels Chicago is running a fundraiser right now called Hunger Takes No Holiday, and you can donate at its website. Or you can donate in a different way and get a little something-something for yourself, too.
We're pretty excited to be partnering with Bona Beef this year. They are a recent partner of ours who is specifically helping to raise some funds for the Hunger Takes No holiday campaign that I mentioned, but also celebrate their 40th anniversary.
Well, that seems like a win-win. Enjoy an Italian beef, and Bona will donate to Meals on Wheels.
Italian beef for everyone. We are just really excited to be partnering with them this year.
Today and tomorrow, Bona will be donating a hot meal for the holidays to Meals on Wheels for every Italian beef sandwich sold in any of its 25 stores. After Chicago Board of Trade, a USDA supply and demand report this morning, It shows tight supplies continuing for soybeans, and soybeans right now are up about 23 cents. Corn is up 4, and wheat's trading about 12 cents higher. From the farm to your belly, today is National Scrapple Day. I had to look that one up. Scrapple is a mush of pork scraps and trimmings combined with cornmeal and wheat flour. Yum.
I thought it was a kind of candy or something, but no, huh?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure somebody loves Scrapple out there. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Seems like that Xfinity stuff has been cleared up or cleaned up now. But boy, there was some sort of hack. Well, I'm not exactly sure what happened, but it started in California and worked its way across the country. And Amy Guth joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch to maybe catch us up a little bit on that. Do we know what happened, Amy?
Well, so far, Comcast Xfinity is calling it a network outage. They've not given any sort of indication that there was any kind of hack or anything like that. They said it was part of an earlier network issue that had caused these disruptions. But when we're talking about disruptions, we're talking about a large swath of people. Down Detector, that's an outage tracking service, they recorded more than 50,000 outage reports by 9 a.m. So that's a pretty big number, you know, especially you get up, you start in your day, you know, yeah. and off it's rolling. So a lot of consternation on social media, a lot of people issuing those reports. And, you know, Comcast Xfinity has social channels, and that's something they've rolled out a number of years ago, and they really are pretty responsive on social media. So whoever is operating those accounts certainly had a busy day, but they started to kind of taper off that. So by within about an hour after that, they had dropped that number to about 20,000, and then they had dropped it again by about 11 Eastern. It was down to about 3,000 reports, but it was massively impacting Illinois, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania primarily, but as well as some other regions. So it was a big one. It was just really kind of goes to show us how reliant we are on the connectivity of our devices to do our work and go about our lives.
And I'm sorry, though, Amy, have they said that they were hacked, or was it just some sort of equipment failure? Do we know what caused this?
Nope, they haven't given any indication that it was a hack. They've been talking about a network disruption that they said to CNN Business a little bit earlier in a statement. They said a network issue had caused intermittent service disruptions for some customers. Then they said, we've addressed the issue and service is now restoring for impacted customers as we continue to investigate the root cause. So they haven't necessarily ruled that out, but they certainly aren't leading with that. I don't see any indication that that is the case. If that is the case, they I'm sure will reveal it later. But it seems to be, you know, when we talk about network issues, that's usually making a switch of software, you know, making some upgrades, things like that, that cause some unintended consequences. But we shall see.
Robinhood was hit by a data breach, though, right?
Yes, that on the other hand was confirmed to be the work of hackers. So Robinhood, which is the popular investing app.
The Bears head into their buy.
Stand by. You're still there, right?
I'm still here, yeah.
Keep going, Nate.
So Robinhood, which is, you know, the investing app that you and I have talked about many, many times, of course, that was the big role of, had played a big role in, you know, the GameStop trading kerfuffle, things like that. But they said that there was a security breach last week. Hackers accessed about 7 million users' personal information, 7 million people. Now, they have a lot of users. They have about 22 million users. So this is not all of them. Of the 22 million, about 19 million are actively using the app. So it's still 7 million is a fraction of that, but that's still a large number. What they believe they got was names and email addresses. They said for a little over 300 people, the information also included date of birth and zip code, and 10 people had a little more extensive account details that were revealed. But what happened was after they detected what was going on, they put some security, you know, perimeters around it, and it was essentially ransomed. So there was a demand for a ransom payment. So this is definitely, you know, the work of this is definitely a target, whereas we don't necessarily know what happened to Comcast. But so if you are a Robinhood user, good idea to log in, change your password, check in, and also check your spam folder in your email to see if they have generated an automatic email to telling you if you're, you know, one of those people impacted.
Did they say if they paid the ransom?
They didn't say, which I think is very interesting, that wasn't immediately available. That could have changed just in the last, you know, short time while I was waiting to talk to you. But as of earlier today, they had not paid the ransom, or they had not said that they did or not, rather.
Peloton was one of those stay-at-home stocks that did extraordinarily well. Now the value of the stock has gone down quite a bit. What's the Peloton news today?
Yeah, so the stock did shift a bit, and certainly a lot of industry watchers were hypothesizing that had a lot to do with people are not stuck at home. They're wanting to go back out to the gym or go out running outside, things like that. But Peloton, kind of on the heels of that, they're announcing something called The Guide. It'll be available in a bundle with this heart rate armband that they're going to sell for $495 in the U.S. and Canada. And then it'll go on sale in the UK, Australia, and Germany a little bit later next year. But it's essentially a camera that plugs into your TV screen, and it'll track your movements. You can kind of participate in an on-demand class that's weightlifting, aerobics, and, you know, different kind of strength training sort of classes. It's also voice-activated, so it'll recommend classes based on what maybe muscles you worked out the day prior. So it's like, hey, you did leg day yesterday, let's work on arms or shoulders or something like that. It is a bit, it's a little stripped down. We've seen some things like that, like Lululemon's Mirror, which is, you know, a much higher retail point. It has a few more bells and whistles. And then Tonal, which is backed by Amazon, that's a far higher price point. You know, Tonal kind of has like magnetic powered weights and a lot of other kind of tracking device, and Mirror said it's adding some ankle weights and smart dumbbells to help track that. So this is a little simpler version, still kind of a higher price point at $495. But this, there's an add-on to that that's about $13 a month for live and on-demand classes for a little extra, you know, interaction with teachers. But it's another move from Peloton. With, you know, the at-home fitness piece is so interesting. I mean, I think when Mirror rolled out, I kind of thought this is really going to change the way people are working out at home. So no surprise at all that we have seen this move from Peloton, and these three companies kind of continue to move into that space.
Amy Guth joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk again later in the week. Thanks, Amy.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.